Hello, and welcome to your favorite bookish podcast, Fully Booked and Caffeinated. I'm Heather.
I'm Kelsey.
And today, our discussion revolves around the deliciously witty and inspiring, yes, I stole that from the back of the book, memoir written by Dinner for Vampires by Bethany Joy Lenz from good old One Tree Hill. I gotta tell you, man, I did not realize how much of an outsider she was on this show until I had no idea. So we'll get into it obviously, but I was very shocked about that because they just seem such like a close-knit group of co-stars, and I'm like, oh.
And also the fact that she's struggling with everything that she talks about in her book, and she's just an incredible actress, a great performer. Like, yeah, people could say, oh, it's a soapy teen TV show, but it was a cult TV show. Like this,
I know.
People still rewatch it to this day, including us.
And I know. And like, I didn't watch it when it first aired. I like binged it right before the very last season. And her character was my favorite, and I resonated with her like the most. So I was really excited about this one. But before we dive into everything, what is your drink of choice for this episode / this morning?
Well, this morning I had. Listen, I know that it's March 2nd. I mean, it's March 10th. Jesus Christ. I know that it's March and it was March. 65 degrees today, but I'm still working on my peppermint mocha Nespresso pods.
That's fine. That's fine.
But I had it iced, obviously. So I had a little iced peppermint mocha and it was delicious and hit the spot. Although I did, yesterday when I went on my little excursion, aka left the house, I had what you got the other day, the brown sugar shaken espresso, but I added, so I love that drink already, but I added the vanilla cold foam. And it was very good.
I told you.
It's very good.
I don't think I could get it without the cold foam.
Yeah. I really like it with the cold foam because I like the brown sugar drink because it's not too sweet and the vanilla cold foam adds a little sweetness, but not too much. So I that's my new favorite too. So thank you.
Which is what I'm drinking right now. I did. Yes, I did go get an espresso drink at 6:45 p.m. But I had a long day.
Yeah.
I had to leave work early to go pick up a sick child at daycare. So it's much needed.
Listen, we are actually doing amazing.
Every day of my life.
But surprisingly, we are doing amazing.
I know. Our friend texted me. She was like, were you okay? Like, you seemed a little distant on Saturday because we all hung out. And I'm like, girl, I'm fucking exhausted.
Yeah.
I'm like, I am just exhausted.
Like, no, like, I was napping with my eyes open, actually.
I was like, being a mom is not for the weak. I'm just tired. Anyway, cheers.
Cheers.
Bethany's acting career really began at age 17 when she was casted on the CBS daytime soap opera Guiding Light, which love that. After her two-year contract with Guardian Light, she moved from New York City to Los Angeles, and she starred in a few different works. She did a couple musicals, some guest appearances on popular shows like Felicity and Charmed, and then she got a movie role in Bring It On Again. She was a cheerleader, which is funny because then she was a cheerleader in One Tree Hill. And then she was cast in her breakout role at age 22 as Haley James Scott on One Tree Hill, which is a show that quickly, like we said, became a cult TV show. Like, I think one of the biggest teen dramas to ever have.
Yeah, and I mean, they used to have so many like this. Like, I can think of, you know, Dawson's Creek, One Tree Hill.
And then, like, before OC, our era, like, Beverly Hills 90210, like, in that era. Not as big as, obviously, these ones, but still it had such a big following and people were obsessed with it.
And it's like, these shows went on for 10 seasons with 22 episodes a season. They just don't make them like that anymore.
No, now it's like a streaming and you get 10 episodes if you're lucky.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then she also recorded an album during her One Tree Hill time. And she also toured with Tyler Hilton during season 2 of the show, which I like totally forgot because I've been doing like the rewatch podcast and like watching the episodes as I do them. And I'm still only on season 2. And, like, I totally forgot that she's just not in, like, half of season 2. And that's because, like, her and Tyler Hilton did, like, this nationwide tour.
Which is so funny.
It's also insane because it's only season 2 of the show.
Yeah.
Like, it had that big of a following that they were able to just successfully do this tour. Like, that was insane to me.
And they talk about that. Well, she talks about it in the book that they didn't realize how big they were until they went to see on TRL. But like, you had to have known something was going on if you're doing this huge tour and people are coming to see you.
I know. And then since the end of One Tree Hill, she's like starred in a few minor roles, but she's done lots of Hallmark Christmas movies. So I love that for her. And then, like I said, she has the VOTH Rewatch podcast with Sophia Bush and Hillary Burton called Drama Queens. And I'm only on season 2. So I still have a long ways to go.
Mm-hmm.
So that's her. I mean, she's like, everyone knows who she is. I'm not going to. It's like the Britney Spears episode. Mm-hmm. Like, we all know who Bethany Joy Lenz is. And if you don't, now you do. So here's the description of Dinner for Vampires. I guess it's not really a description. It's more like the bio of the book. In the early 2000s, after years of hard work and determination to break through as an actor, Bethany Joy Lenz was finally cast as one of the leads on the hit drama One Tree Hill. Her career was about to take off, but her personal life was slowly beginning to unravel. What none of the show's millions of fans knew, hidden even from her co-stars, was her secret double life in a cult. As an only child who often had to fend for herself and always wanted a place to belong, Lenz found the safe haven she had been searching for in a Bible study group with other Hollywood creatives. However, the group soon morphed into something more sinister, a slowly woven web of manipulation, abuse, and fear under the guise of a church covenant called the Big House Family. Piece by piece, Lenz began to give away her autonomy, ultimately relocating to the family's Pacific Northwest compound, overseen by a domineering minister who would convince Lenz to marry one of his sons and steadily drained millions of her TV income without her knowledge. Family minders assigned to her on set, struggle session-inspired meetings in the basement of a filthy house, and regular counseling with leadership were just part of the tactics used to keep her loyal. Only when she became a mother did Lenz find the courage to leave and spare her child from a similar fate. After nearly a decade, and with the unlikely help of a One Tree Hill superfan, she finally managed to escape the family's grip and begin to heal from the deep trauma that forever altered her relationship with God and her understanding of faith. Written with powerful honesty and dark humor, Dinner for Vampires is an inspiring story about the importance of identity and understanding what you believe.
Perfect.
Love it. A lot of big words in that bio. It's like, wow, this is very well written.
I feel like it doesn't really, it gives a summary of what happens, but it doesn't give like the vibe of what happens.
It doesn't actually.
It makes it sound so much more sinister. I'm not saying it wasn't sinister, but I'm saying it was definitely more of like a gradual thing.
Mm-hmm. And like we said, like off air before, we like didn't realize how churchy this was going to be. Like church and religion was 97% of this book.
Yeah. So I thought it was going to be more of a Scientology or Nexium, where it's like all about improving yourself and that type of cult, like a basically MLM and cult form. But instead, this is a Christian cult. This is a very fucked up God cult. And Jesus centered, like evangelical Christian cult.
Mm-hmm. And then so I had started to just read the physical book and I couldn't get into it. And then once I switched over to the audiobook, anyone who hasn't like read this yet, do the audiobook because it made it so much more enjoyable. And then she reads it herself did such like a fantastic job because she's an actress.
Mm-hmm.
So like she did wonderful, you know, like I was getting emotional during the part she was getting emotional. Mm-hmm. So it was just a really, really good telling.
And it makes it so conversational because she knows what she's saying. She's the one who wrote it. So it sounds like she's just talking to a friend.
Exactly. So the book is broken up into parts. The first is the prologue. And in this prologue, she's describing a fight between her husband and her. And she refers to her husband as the book. And everyone else in the book has like an alias. It's not their actual names. So her husband is referred to as Quiet Boy or QB or Q. And in the midst of the fight, QB throws a sweatshirt at her. And Joy notes that this wasn't the first time he had acted out in that way. He often broke things in anger, which Love that. Mm-hmm. But this was the final straw for Joy. So while her husband was taking a shower, she picked up their infant daughter, Rosie, and left him. So you already can tell from, like, the vibes of this prologue that this is going to be dark for her.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I knew nothing about her in this, really realistically, going into this. So, like, mm-hmm. that first, just reading that first part, I was already like, oh, I'm like, I'm in for it.
Yeah. And also, I didn't even think about this till you just summarized it, but this doesn't even feel like, oh, this is part of the cult. This feels like she was in an abusive relationship exactly. and that's that. And then she exactly. kind of gets into how she got where she was.
Mm-hmm. So in part one, it begins with her describing her childhood and early career as an actress. She was born in Florida. Her family moved to Texas for her father's job as a teacher at an expensive Christian private school. So her family ended up moving around a lot, and it made it difficult for Joy to make friends. So she already has that feeling of wanting to belong somewhere because she didn't have it as a child. And she finds community in the theater at the age of 7 and discovers her love for acting, which, go on, girl, because you're a good actress. And then she had some early success as a child actor. And then her family's circumstances deteriorated. Her beloved grandmother died, which this was sad. Could sound like she had such like a good relationship mm-hmm. with her grandma.
And she was so supportive.
And her grandma was like, you gotta like follow your dreams. Like, fuck everyone else. Like, mm-hmm. literally, her grandma was like a badass. She was like, you have to just do what you love. So after the death of her grandma, their family moved to New Jersey into the grandma's house. And then her parents ended up divorcing. And she lives with her mom for a little bit. And it just sounds like her relationship with her mom also wasn't great. Like, she just didn't have good familial relationships aside from her grandma.
Mm-hmm.
It sounded like her and her mom had this kind of, not like abusive relationship, but she didn't feel, the way that came across to me is that she like didn't feel loved by her mom. Mm-hmm.
I do have a lot of questions about her upbringing that we don't mm-hmm. get answers
you
to.
You don't. You get a very small, mm-hmm. like she barely talks about her upbringing. She yeah. like kind of jumps into like where like her, she gives like a little tidbit of her life and then she kind of just jumps into her acting career.
Mm-hmm. So, and it kind of, I mean, she implies that it was horrible, like that mm-hmm. she was so quick to cut her parents out of her life, which yeah. I'm not invalidating that, but it also, to me, it seems like this was just a teenager and her mom clashing mm-hmm. a lot, not able to communicate. And then as she got older, her parents did try to show that they cared,
mm-hmm.
but they just had different communication styles. They weren't on yeah. the same page.
100%. After she graduates high school, she goes, she moves to New York City to work on the soap opera Guiding Light. At first she was like an evil twin and then they like recast her as someone else. And you can just do that on soap operas.
Oh yeah.
You could just be different people on different seasons and 100%. No one bats an eye. Like I remember my mom, she still does, not as often as she used to, but like she would record General Hospital when DVRs wasn't a thing.
Wait, so, this is so funny that you're saying this.
So because she would just have VHSs of General Hospital.
Oh my God. I was just talking to my mom about General Hospital, and she was saying that she was watching it when she found out that she was like pregnant with my sister or something. My uh-huh. sister's 40 years old. Like,
no, it's been on for.
And it's still on.
I think it's, as of right now, I think it actually is the longest running one.
I think so too.
Because I don't think Guiding Light's on anymore. I feel like Guiding Light got, I know like a really big one on CBS had gotten canceled.
Mm-hmm.
But, and now it's so funny because I watch, I think it is on Paramount. They have like a new daytime soap and it's like a heavily black casted mm-hmm. soap, which I love that. But I'm just like, oh my God. I'm like, they're still churning out these goddamn soap operas and people mm-hmm. watch them.
Of course so, they do.
You know?
Wow.
But yeah, so I had the VHSs of just General Hospital lying around my house.
Amazing.
But yeah, there'd be people on there and they would just recast roles mm-hmm. too. Like there'll be people a different actor and playing a son and they're mm-hmm. just like, oh, no biggie. It's totally fine. So when her contract with Guiding Light was up, her friend Camille urged her to move to LA. And while in LA, she becomes close with her roommate, Mina. And Mina begins taking Joy to a weekly Bible study group at the apartment of her friends and former Seventh-day Adventist Abe and Harker Van Hewitt and their mother, Pamela. So I did a little bit like research digging into this. And did you look into like who the Van Hewitts are?
No, I
So
was going to, but I didn't.
it's the one actor, Jonathan Jackson, who was in Tuck Everlasting. And he was also on a soap opera. What was he on? I can't remember now. Maybe it was like One Life to Live or something like that. He was on one of the soap operas, or All My Children, maybe. But yeah, he was one of the brothers. I think he might have been based off of Harker. I can't remember. But yeah, that is
Oh,
who.
he was on General Hospital.
Okay, General Hospital. Okay, yeah, there we go. Literally, I was like, it felt like, because I was just talking about it, I didn't think that was the one. But yeah, so he was also on a soap opera. Which I guess soap opera people are just very religious. I don't know. I don't know. One day, a pastor named Les arrived and slowly began to take over the group. Les preached that Joy needed to fully surrender to God and embrace her authentic self. I wanted to punch this guy immediately in the face when he was introduced.
I got such a
The ick.
vivid picture in my mind
Yeah.
of him, just like dirty, and like he calls her baby all the time, and like tries to be this like dad figure. And oh
I
no,
don't like
I
it.
can't.
I didn't like it at all. Like, he already made me so mad. But like again, you can't even blame her for falling for the ruse because she just wanted that parental figure so bad. And Les obviously being an asshole and preying on women, he knew exactly what to say and exactly what to
Well,
do.
he immediately establishes, like, the first time he meets her, she's talking about how she loves this pastor in New York, and he's like, "Oh, I used to preach with him." So she's like, "Oh, this is a sign that I should trust this guy, even though I
Exactly.
think he's like skeevy and dirty."
Yep.
So he knew exactly what to say to his
Oh
audience.
yeah. After she ends her lo ends things with her longtime crush she calls Blue Eyes, she accepts Pamela's invitation to spend time at the Van Hewitt home in Idaho.
Wait, can we pause for 1 second? I need to talk about Blue Eyes.
Yeah.
Why did she need to break up with Blue Eyes? They kissed one time and they'd been friends for like 8 years.
I think that she was just a very much a hopeless romantic. And I feel like Joy was like me in high school. Like I would pine after this man for so long. And I would just be like, I feel like I related to it because I was that girl. And I could see her just holding out hope that, oh, this is like, he's going to like marry me. Like it's going to happen. It's just taking a little longer than I would like. So
Well,
I got it.
I didn't
Yeah.
blame him when he was like, when she called him and he's
She's
like,
like, I know, that was a little
wait,
like,
we're getting married? Like,
that was a
I
little
didn't
too
know we
forward
liked
for
each
me.
other.
Yeah. But I mean, you gotta give her props. She's like, are we getting married or no? Like, yes or no. Do you like me? Yes or no? Check yes or no. Like, literally.
That's true. I get completely what you're saying.
Yeah, no, she definitely comes off as just like this hopeless romantic. And you like get that vibe too, even like throughout the book when everyone is getting married and she's like, when is it
Well, and
my turn?
he wasn't giving her any of this validation, it turns out, because he didn't think anything of their relationship. So she was filling in the blanks and thinking that he felt the same way she did.
Exactly. So Joy felt excited by the sense of belonging she found there, despite her parents' growing concerns about the group. That Christmas, Joy spent the holiday with the family, as the group came to be known, instead of with her parents, and she was thrilled by the love and acceptance the group showed her. So, and it's like this weird thing that like the family would start referring to their parents as bio parents, and like, you know. And then Pam was so weird because she would call them like her spirit daughters. And I'm like, what is happening?
Yeah, like
What is happening?
it was so weird. And also, I was pissed at Joy when her mom, she went off the grid. She went to another state without telling her mom, and then didn't answer her phone for 2 days straight. And then her mom is like, "Oh my God, I was worried about you." And she's like, "I'm not a child." And she's like, okay, Joy, like, but maybe just a text, perhaps. And she's like, I'll text you if it feels appropriate. I was like, what the fuck?
I know. Like, she
And
just
like,
immediately, like.
because, yeah, they had like put this in her brain that this is gonna make you feel stronger if you build this boundary with someone who actually cares about you.
Yeah. I just think that she finally was in this scenario where people understood her they were on the same wavelength as her, and she finally just did have this sense of belonging. And, you know, the, like, Les and Pam did their own version of love bombing her.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't saying I love you or anything, but they were smothering her with the words and attention that she was seeking.
Mm-hmm.
So what can you do?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, telling that they're the only ones who can understand her. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I mean,
she was so, like, vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's what made me so mad is, like, these disgusting people are preying on a vulnerable, emotional young girl.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to, like, mold her into what they want her to be and taking mm-hmm. full advantage of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I hate it. And that's why religion, organized religion, is so fucking complicated, because originally, yes, her having this group of people, especially when you're in Hollywood and you're, you know, around all this, like, drugs mm-hmm. and partying and all this stuff, and you want to focus on your faith. Okay, it's great to have that group of people, but then there's that fine line between people who are actually trying to help you and people mm-hmm. who are trying to manipulate and use you.
Yep.
And it's very hard to know the difference, obviously.
Yep. So in part two, this is, like, the biggest part, definitely, of the book. It kind of goes over the next trajectory, 10 years or so of her life. And this is, like, a lot of the One Tree Hill stuff. So in part two, she describes being cast and working on One Tree Hill while becoming, you know, increasingly enveloped into the family cult. She initially resisted auditioning for One Tree Hill because she wasn't sure if it fit in with her dream of advancing her career to act in movies. So she had more of this dream of wanting to be, like, a Hollywood superstar. And it was interesting to know that, like, she originally auditioned for Brooke Davis. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's wild to me because I could never picture her as Brooke Davis.
No.
Like, Sophia Bush was the perfect Brooke Davis.
Mm-hmm.
And Bethany was the perfect, like, Haley.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, like, crazy to me. Like, I'm like, so I'm like, imagine, like, if she hadn't been pushed to just audition for this, like, then she wouldn't have even had this career.
Yeah, because she said no. Mm-hmm. And then they basically begged her once the pilot got picked up.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up being what she feared would happen did happen in the fact mm-hmm. that, you know, she was scared that she would get kind of pigeonholed
yeah.
into the show because a lot of people didn't go from TV to film back then. And that did end up happening to her, but she was wildly successful on the show, so it didn't really matter.
No. And now it's, like, an interesting concept because now you look at what the entertainment industry is now, and it's, like, it doesn't matter what you do
mm-hmm.
because there's so many avenues now because of streaming services, and there's so many miniseries and then actual TV shows. You know, like, there was, like, a movie I saw that's currently in theaters that has, like, SZA as a lead mm-hmm. and, like, she's a singer. Like, there's honestly, you can, like, Beyonce put out a country album.
Mm-hmm.
Post Malone put out a country album. You don't need to be pigeonholed anymore. You can mm-hmm. do whatever you please. And if you have a fan base that loves you, they're going to follow you no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I understand sure. back in that day, I agree. You definitely were either a TV star or a movie star.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you were either.
And she already started on soap opera. So she was already like, I got to get mm-hmm. out of here.
Yeah. And, like, you know, her manager was trying to compare her to Jennifer Aniston, but, like, Jennifer Aniston was, like, a whole other level. Like, she was yeah. so successful on Friends, and then when she went and did movies, and then that became, like, her career, and that doesn't always happen for, like, everybody.
Mm-hmm. And I also feel like Friends was a different age group of viewers anyway. One Tree Hill was definitely a younger age group.
Yeah. I loved the little spot where she does, like, her initial audition with her screen test with Chad Michael Murray. I'm like, that was actually, like, really cute.
I loved it.
And, like,
she was
talking about how she did all these things that weren't scripted. Which, again, just, like, goes to show how good of an actress she was because she was able to, like, really put herself in the role. So, obviously, mm-hmm. she got cast. And then she ends up moving to Wilmington, North Carolina. Les warned Joy to avoid becoming too close to the cast and crew of One Tree Hill because they were not spiritually safe.
Because Les is spiritually safe, obviously.
Yeah, they were very much like, don't get close to anybody. Because, again, I'm sure they had a fear that if she started talking to people, they would start discouraging her from affiliating herself with this family.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
She rents a beach house far from the other actors and spent a lot of time of her own. And, like, this really broke my heart to know that, like, she was on this show for 9 seasons, I think it was, and she just didn't have a relationship with these people.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, and it sounds like
how
they,
to be so lonely.
They wanted to have a relationship. I know. With her. Like, it's, I mean, not clearly, like, she was being ostracized.
She clearly had, like, a relationship with her, like, hair and makeup crew. Mm-hmm. I forget what she called them. Something mamas or bear.
The den moms or something.
I can't remember what it was. I remember. Mama bears, maybe. Maybe that's what it was. Whatever. But, like, she talks about them a lot. And Paul Johansson, mm-hmm. who, like, you know, was an older, he was Dan Scott on the show. And it was,
I did think it was kind of weird that that was her strongest relationship.
I'm not surprised, only because I listened to the podcast. So I've heard them talk about, like, him and the actor Craig Schaefer, who plays Keith, and how they really, like, took the young kids under their wing on the show. And, like, mm-hmm. were very much, like, you know, kind of like their mentors. And Paul was apparently just, like, which is, like, so crazy to me, because Dan Scott was the worst fucking character on TV of all time. Mm-hmm. And he's literally the sweetest fucking man on earth.
I know.
Like, literally the sweetest man on earth. And which makes me love him that much more. Because, mm-hmm. like, you make me hate you. But, like, he's just, like, such a nice guy.
It's like when Cersei from Game of Thrones, when she does, like, signings and stuff, people literally won't go to her to get their stuff signed, and she's like, that just shows that I'm this amazing actress, because I'm a nice person and everyone hates me.
So during this time, Les convinced Joy to invest $10,000 into a motel that the family was buying as part of their ministry. First red flag, girl. Well, I mean, actually not the first. There was many, many red flags.
Okay.
But this was, like, the biggest first red flag.
Yes, but also, I get why she didn't see it as a red flag, because she's making $45,000 per episode.
Wild.
For, like, a 22-episode season, and they only wanted $10,000.
I know.
So I understand why she was like, oh, of course. Like,
that's fine.
That's fine, and I don't know anything about money anyway, so,
and, like,
whatever.
And, like, you'll get it back to me, and, like, she brings it up to, like, her money managers, and they're like, no, you should not do this. She's like, well, I'll write the check anyways.
Yeah.
While on the show, she found that occasionally her religious convictions came into conflict with the show creator's desire to show her character in risque situations, but she insisted on not, for example, being filmed wearing only a bra. They actually talked about this a lot in the first few episodes of Drama Queens, but also, like, Mark Schwann was, like, a dick. Like, he was, like, the worst person to work for. There was, like, a lot of, like, sexual harassment in the writers and stuff like that. So I'm, like, not surprised. But, you know, even, like, I forget what he, like, told her manager. He was like, you know, this show is about, like, fucking and sucking,
fucking
or whatever.
And sucking. Yeah.
Whatever. You know, I'm like, can you imagine just being, like, a young 20-year-old and, like, religion or not aside, like, for your creator of the show to come at you with that immediate vibe, I would be so turned off from it in general.
She made it seem like it was, like, because she says, you know, she would push back on this stuff and then everyone called her difficult. Like, no, that was just a man berating women and controlling them, because it is not, like, if you don't have that in your contract, it's not out of the realm that you should be like, no, I'm not letting you film me in a bra. Like, she's allowed to have that boundary, and it has nothing to do with her being in a cult, and has nothing to do with, you know what I mean? Like, it was such a cop out from that director.
And the three of them talked about it, that they did push back a lot. I'm proud of them for doing that. But again, like, you're, like, this young female, it's your first big show. You don't want to be too challenging and too disruptive to what the show is trying to create. But I give them such credit for doing it, because you should feel comfortable in what you're doing. And if you're uncomfortable 100%. With something, it should be okay to say that. Like, it shouldn't be a big deal to be like, okay, and then you can just wear, like, a skimpy tank top, and that's good enough. You know what I mean? So,
and also, it's this whole thing of every time a woman tries to stand up for herself, she's a bitch. Anytime she tried to have her own agency, they would call her manager, but, like, she's so difficult to work with.
Exactly.
Like, no, she's not doing every single thing that you ask. So I just didn't love the way it was framed, as if it was a negative because she was in this cult, when it's like, no, that was all valid.
That was all valid. So after some time on the show, Joy decides to move into a house in downtown Wilmington. And when Les found out, Oh, Daddy Les was mad. He chastised Joy for not asking the family about this decision because, you know, she needs to discuss this with the family before she makes any life-changing decisions. And he told her to come to the big house in Idaho for a struggle session where they would address this and other challenges of Joy's. Basically, she would go into a dank, dark basement, be put in the middle of like a prayer circle type scenario, and they would just berate her mm-hmm. for hours.
It was like intervention.
For no good reason. Like,
they made her read her journal out loud, that? And then they said, well, all your entries are about yourself. And she's like, it's my journal.
I know. They're like, well, this, you know, it should be about your, you know, the spiritual, and it should be about God. And she's just like,
they're like, that's your problem, that you're making everything about yourself.
Like, and so here you go. Here's like the second big red flag. You know, you're being berated for being your own human being, and you're not allowed to be yourself. You have to fully give yourself over to God and, mm-hmm. That's it. The tensions in the family were increasing. The motel was struggling. Shocker.
Although
there was one funny part. I'm not going to go too much into it, but the fact that there was like a swingers convention. And yes. Then the girl who was running it was like, I think it was Emily that maybe was doing it. Mm-hmm. She was like, she turned them away. And then for good reason, I could understand, like, this is supposed to be a ministry. You're going to allow like a sexcapade over the weekend in your ministry? Like, no. And then Les and his, you know, right-hand man, disgusting Kurt, were like, no, that's, you know, don't you think that this is the perfect time? These people that are partaking in debauchery, we can change them. They just want the fucking money.
100%.
That's all they want. They don't give
this
a fuck
like
who it is.
One of those times that careful mask that they've put up is slipping. Mm-hmm. You know, like, yeah. This is somewhere where you're starting to see the cracks. And it's like,
and then they like demote her because she turned them away. I'm just like, this is
because a woman shouldn't be in charge of a man mm-hmm. anyway.
So Kurt like becomes manager, and I'm just like, this is blah blah blah. So yeah, the motel was struggling, which shocker. And then Harker Van Hewitt began openly challenging Les's teachings, and so he finally has at least one person pushing back against him, and Les does not like this, and he's basically trying to shun him from the group in a sense. And then it's crazy because Harker's mom Pam is like fine with it. So like Pam and Les have like this weird relationship.
Pam is like her henchman,
yeah,
but she's the caring mm-hmm. nurturing mother henchman.
Yeah. And then Joy is starting to notice that everyone is getting paired off and getting married throughout the family. And she's just feeling, again, very lonely. She's a hopeless romantic. All she wants is to fall in love and, like, be married and be a wife and have a family. And so she kind of, like, convinces herself that she's attracted and into QB, which I knew.
Because he's the only one left.
Exactly. And so she tells Les, like, oh, I think I like QB, but I don't know if it's lust or if I actually, like, want to be with him. And you know that Les was going to jump on this. And, like, he does. And so they're engaged, and then they're married soon after. When I was just doing some Googling, a picture of her and her husband showed up on the Google feed. Just, when you get a chance, just look at their wedding portrait, because she looks how she Michael Galante, like, she looks,
just looking up her age, because they said that he was 21, but she was only 24, so it's not bad.
Yeah, she was still young, but like, she just looks not happy, and it's not the kind of wedding photo that you would expect to see
this guy.
He's like not even that good looking. He's kind of like weird looking.
Oh yeah.
Do you see the wedding photo of her? Uh-huh. Like, he's looking at her, but she's, like, looking at the camera, and she looks like, please fucking save me.
Yeah, she's never looked less interested in her life.
No, and she's
meanwhile,
like,
if I could see a picture of her and James Lafferty.
I know. Ugh. But, like, she even before the wedding was coming, like, you can tell that she was, like, regretting ever saying anything and doing this, because this isn't what she wanted, like, mm-hmm. whatsoever.
She's like, we don't have a single thing in common.
No. And you know, once they get married, he becomes increasingly controlling and aggressive toward her. He moves into Wilmington and closely, like, scrutinizes her every move. He would grow angry and possessive when she spent time with male coworkers. And then eventually he moves back to Idaho because he's like, I can't be here in Wilmington. But he also still has this control over her.
Mm-hmm.
He had access to all of her finances.
Ding, ding, ding.
And he even dictated what she could wear. That entire scene where he made her change, I was wanting to cry. Like, I wanted to cry mm-hmm. because everything she put on, he's like, well, you can't wear sweatpants or lounge pants or yoga pants because people are going to want to sleep with you. What?
Because they're going to think of you being comfy in your house watching TV and then they're going to want to fuck you.
You can't wear a crop top because you're showing off midriff and that's inappropriate.
You can't wear jeans because they're too tight. Mm-hmm. She's like, they're jeans.
You can't wear a skirt because it's easy access.
Easy access. And to go to where? To go to where in fucking Idaho?
Yeah.
Give me a break.
Yeah. And then the icing on the cake, they had a sex schedule because, you know, he's a man and man should get sex. You know, marriage is about the man getting sex whenever the fuck he wants.
Because
mm-hmm. that's what Les said, you know. Yeah, Les was like, that's what you're supposed to do.
Her only role is to make money and be a blow-up doll.
Literally. Like,
and the craziest part is that there's the one part where he's like, why can't you just obey me? And she's mm-hmm. like, obey?
Uh-huh.
And so she was, I'm surprised that she was the person that this happened to because she says like, oh, I'm a strong woman. I come from this mm-hmm. line of strong women. And I think it's because she was so non-confrontational that even though she knew what he was doing, she was like, it's not worth the fight. It's not mm-hmm. worth losing the rest mm-hmm. of my family, my entire, all exactly. my friends, everyone that I'm close with, I would lose all of them.
That was definitely like her biggest fear was if I like end this relationship with QB, like then I'm just going to lose the family.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that was like terrifying for her.
Because obviously they're going to pick QB because that's Les's son.
Exactly. So to channel her in creative impulses and find a, you know, a degree of freedom, she spent her free time writing a musical version of The Notebook by Nicholas Sparks. And I loved this. Like, this was, like, so fantastic. And again, she's a hopeless romantic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, mm-hmm. but the show ends up not getting picked up for, they say for legal reasons, but then there's like talk around town because she was affiliated with this cult mm-hmm. and nobody wanted anything to do with that. So that sucks for her. And like, this isn't the first time that she kind of gets fucked because she finally gets like the role of Belle in Beauty and the Beast on Broadway, which is literally all she wanted to do in her life was to be on Broadway. And
as
she was
Belle.
So ecstatic. She's telling everybody and everyone is so, so happy for her. And then when she brings it to the family, they're like, well, is that really what God wants you to do? You know, I don't know if this is the best choice for you.
Mm-hmm.
And like, she fucking buys into it.
Mm-hmm. And then he says, you should take a couple days to think about it. And then he forbids anyone from talking to her, answering her calls. Mm-hmm. So, of course, she's like, oh, this is what mm-hmm. my life would be like. Even though this is my dream since I'm a little girl.
Exactly.
This is what my life would be like. I would be completely cut off if I take this job.
And everyone was like her previous, like her bio, you know, her bio mom and dad were like blown away.
Mm-hmm.
Her friends were blown away. Like, what do you mean you're turning it? Her manager was like, what do you mean? Like, no, like this mm-hmm. has been your dream. You have to do this. And she's just like, you know, I really thought about it. And like, it just doesn't align with my spiritual,
mm-hmm.
you know, trajectory and blah, blah, blah.
But really, like, it was just that Les figured she probably wouldn't make as much money if she went to Broadway as she
did. And I feel like he wouldn't have as much control over her out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at least with like One Tree Hill, it was more of like a, kind of, I think it would probably be easier to like control her and keep tabs. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, when
well, yeah,
you're in New York City,
exactly,
it's a different breed, and you're gonna mm-hmm. you're on Broadway, like you're just busy 24/7. Like you're not going to be able to give yourself over to, mm-hmm. to anything
and the
else.
Influences in New York City versus the influences in North Carolina. It's obviously a very mm-hmm. big jump. So you're totally right about that.
Yeah. So then the motel is failing, and so Les is like, you know what? I'm going to sell it, and I want to be like in The Sopranos. and I want to have a restaurant, and I want people to come here and be Italian with me.
Sir, you could never.
So, of course, he's like, hey, Joy, we need some money. It'd be real cool if you invest in this property. You'll get back what you put into the motel and more.
Also, why are you allowed to watch Sopranos? Seems like a loophole to me, but okay.
Yeah. So, you know, there's that. So basically, the entirety of part two is just Joy being heavily taken advantage of and being controlled by men in her life that have no right to control her.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that QB never had a job, not a single job,
mm-mm,
never did a goddamn thing. And he's just out here on all her accounts.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Doesn't even clean up after himself.
A very slow and methodical infiltration.
100%. And, you know, not for nothing, QB was made this way.
Oh, no. He was raised this way. And, like, she even says it. Like, I understand that he was groomed, mm-hmm, by Les, and Les molded QB into what he wanted him, mm-hmm, to be.
So the fact that Joy had this, was so influenced by Les, imagine how influenced his son,
exactly,
would be.
Exactly. It was inevitable. Like, he didn't stand a chance. So I still don't feel bad for him, because
no,
you could still be your own fucking person,
mm-hmm,
and you don't, you know, it doesn't give you the right to treat people the way you treat them. But yeah, he was definitely, he didn't stand a chance to not at least be like this for some of his life.
Mm-hmm.
So in part three, Joy talks about leaving One Tree Hill and the family, and it opens up, this blew my mind. So Gretchen, a member of the family, tells the family that she's been gambling away everyone's money that she's in charge of. Because that's another thing. The triad is in charge of everyone's money. So, like, they took over Joy's books, mm-hmm, like, controlled her money completely, and other members of the group. And so Gretchen is like, yeah, I just, like, gambled it all away. And Pam is like, I'm so proud of you for telling us this. And, you know, it makes you, like, a better person. And Joy's like, what the actual fuck?
She's like, easy for you to say.
She's like, what do you mean? Like, you know, because she says, like, oh, the most money that I blew was yours, Joy. Like, I'm so sorry. And she's like, what? No one cares about this. No one cares.
I love how she was like, QB is a piece of shit. He gets mad when I drop a raisin on the,
mm-hmm,
floor. Now he has a real reason to be mad.
And
he runs over and he's like, Gretchen, that's okay. Joy will make more money.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh my God.
And at this point, it's like Joy is getting this realization and realizing kind of what kind of situation she's in,
mm-hmm,
but she's looking around like, am I crazy? Like,
exactly.
Am I the only one seeing this?
I feel like this was probably that monumental moment that really made the light bulb click on, because she's literally is like looking around and she's like, everyone, how does anyone,
mm-hmm,
think this is remotely okay?
Mm-hmm. Like that, and when there was that fight at the baseball game.
Yes. Yeah. You know, and when like Kurt calls
a racial slur.
Yeah.
Miguel.
Juana, and I think his name Miguel was Miguel.
I think
Juana.
It was Miguel, yeah.
And yeah. And they're just like,
and then they're like, oh, we're gonna have pizza tonight and get the house. I'm sorry, what?
Fucking wild. Anyways.
I don't know how Kurt got into all this, because he is not like part of this con. Everyone knows that he's disgusting.
Oh my God. I can't even. I mean, I'm going to get to him. I don't want to, but I'm going to. So then she gives birth to her daughter, and, you know, she begins to realize that she can't put her daughter through this. And again, I think that having her daughter was another big light bulb moment for her, that she had to really reevaluate what she's doing with her life. And so Harker and Mina left the group. And so Joy's like, I'm just going to go too. And of course, it's not going to be easy. You know, she's married to the cult leader's son. Like,
mm-hmm,
that's, and he's not going to want to lose all that fucking money that he's just stealing from her.
Mm-hmm.
So she goes to LA with Rosie and QB. And after this point, you know, she leaves QB, and then the family just stops talking to her. They just like cut off all communication. She reconnects with friends and family from before this, from before the cult. And then it's like when she begins to like officially realize that she was in a cult. Mm-hmm. Like it wasn't what she made it out to be in her head. It was actually something way worse and nefarious. Mm-hmm. And she way was being, darker. She was being preyed on and literally had no idea because like I said, like she was so vulnerable, mm-hmm. you know? So she goes back to Idaho and she's ready to like leave. And then Pam serves her with divorce papers.
I'm dead.
You've been served. I was like, oh my fucking God. I was like,
see,
I
just, she's the henchman.
I just want to like wring her neck as well. And Joy learns that he has stolen approximately $2 million from her that she's never going to get back. Mm-hmm. It's basically her entire earnings from One Tree Hill is just poof, gone. All that hard work that she did. And she had good contracts. Like she says, like mm-hmm. I fought for what I wanted. And, mm-hmm. you know, you kind of had to do that once you're like a seasoned actress. You can't, you have to just fight for what you want and they'll pay you because mm-hmm. they want you. So she should be a millionaire right now. And instead mm-hmm. she has like $220,000 to her name.
And not for nothing, I'm not victim blaming. But when you are married to a man like QB and you know that he has access to your credit cards and you just never checked your bank account, you just never checked?
She just blindly trusted them. Like she was so enveloped in this family and she really thought that they were doing right by her.
But then it's like you see these businesses failing.
I know.
And you're not I wonder if they're grabbing more money. I'm not victim blaming,
but like she was naive about it. Mm-hmm. She truly was naive.
I wanted
naive.
To shake her.
And I feel like she owns up to that. Like she was like, mm-hmm. how did I like let this happen? Like, mm-hmm. I can't believe that like I didn't see this sooner. And it's just, but like she finally has everything she wants and it's not even good.
Yeah.
You know, the family, the marriage, none of it is good. She gets this beautiful daughter out of it, which is like, mm-hmm. she says, that's the only good thing that came out of this was my daughter. And like, that's it. Nothing
and
else.
I really appreciate her taking accountability through this entire book, like knowing that she got duped, but saying like, I know what I did. Yes, I was, mm-hmm. I was influenced and I was manipulated, but she doesn't play the blame game, even though they are to blame. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just think it's well done because she's not like just blaming them, but she's also not, she's also acknowledging what happened to make her mm-hmm. do those things.
Yeah. And then she like, and then, so when she's preparing to leave and, you know, she wants to go back to LA because obviously that's where she needs to be in order to make any money. Mm-hmm. And plus she wants to distance herself as far as possible from this family. And she doesn't want Rosie affiliated with this family in any way. So she reconnects with her dad and then she finds out this entire time her dad's been like researching the fuck out of Les and he like shows up with like a folder full of like paper and research that he's done and he's like, girl, like you're in a fucking cult.
This made me want to cry.
I know. And like he like he does thing. So much for her.
And he's and, like, you thought that I was here not mm-hmm. caring about you every yeah. single day I was trying
Yeah.
to build this case.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so she gets testimony from all these people. And like, so like the one thing with like Kurt, where she like finds out that he was like raping his foster daughter. And I'm just like, what? And then like, you know, Joy tells her, well, like, yeah, when we lived in the house, like we had a shower downstairs in Kurt's bathroom. And I thought that was weird, but you know, they made it sound like that was right. And so we just kind of became desensitized to it. And I'm like, he just had a fucking camera in that shower.
Mm-hmm.
He had a hidden camera in that shower and he was jacking off to that every night. And I'm just mm-hmm. like, you know, holy shit. Like, holy shit. Like,
mm-hmm. and then
this man of God is associating with a fucking pedophile rapist. Mm-hmm. Like, are
and
you fucking
they
kidding
said
me?
That the foster daughter said that Les knew mm-hmm. she went to go live with Les. Mm-hmm. And then they said, oh, no, you can go back and live with Kurt now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They knew that a child was being sexually abused,
mm-hmm.
but it would have been a bad look for them. So they sent her back into yep. that horrifying, harmful environment.
Yep. And then, like, this girl went on the stand for her, and I thought that that was a brave fucking move, too, to, like, go on the stand and, like, say, like, you know, this is the kind of people they are. And so Joy did win full custody of her daughter, and then QB only had, like, visitation.
And but, it's unbelievable that, that girl, the foster daughter, came out of all this.
I agree.
Like, that is horrifying.
Mm-hmm. So the unfortunate part of the story is that she's never going to get that $2 million back.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, listen, you can fight. It's going to cost you like hundreds of thousands of dollars to even try to recoup that money back. And I can't even imagine the red tape that they would have to go through and how long it would take. And where would they even pull that money from? They'd have to scam somebody else, mm-hmm. which is probably what he's been doing. He's just been like scamming person after person to just, you know, pay back whatever he had taken mm-hmm. from other people.
Yeah, I was listening to a Celebrity Memoir Book Club's episode on this, and they were talking about how he was getting around like paying taxes, which we know a lot of people do, especially churches, because even though he wasn't accredited or licensed in any way, mm-hmm. he had that like doctor business and yeah. counseling, and Pam would refer people to his counseling practice and stuff. So mm-hmm. he was able to get income from that and also get like tax breaks and claim all these things. And it's like, he was not qualified for any of this. So
no.
all of that stuff, they already knew all those loopholes. It would have been a nightmare for them to try to unravel this for her to get her money back that they, like you said, they don't even have that money.
No. And, like, another thing to, like, touch base back on, like, the custody battle, you know, there was this comment that her lawyer had said that in family law, because, like, that's what I do, like, I'm a family law paralegal, that the courts really don't care. If there's, like, no domestic abuse, they're not going to fight as hard or take it as seriously. And it's very true. We've had plenty of clients that have, like, tried to, like, fight for like the fact that like I don't think that my significant other is emotionally ready for this to have the, you know, I feel like it's a bad situation, they you know, the kids want to stay with me more, and the court's just like, no, it's 50-50 custody, like you have to go with your dad or you have to go with your mom. And it's like, can you like it's mind-blowing.
Mm-hmm.
Like mm-hmm. this entire career is just hard. Mm-hmm. Especially since having Millie, like family law is a crazy fucking mm-hmm. place to be in.
And the fact that Les, the grandpa, has, you know, had all these allegations against him, but mm-hmm. everyone was too scared to speak out, and the court doesn't want to hear any of that because it didn't come out before, and mm-hmm. there was no proof and all this stuff. And it's like, how can you even risk it?
I know. Ugh. So that was like reading, like, hearing that part, I was like, it's just so true. It's like, I completely mm-hmm. understand like what she went through during that time, because custody battles are no joke, and you're never fully satisfied with your outcome
mm-hmm.
because, you know, you just don't want the other person in their life
mm-hmm.
and you obviously don't have a choice.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, it obviously made it more complicated because it was over state lines and mm-hmm. it was, you know, yeah. I'm sure it added to things that she was a celebrity and, you know, all that type of stuff. So,
yeah. So Joy decided to write Dinner for Vampires to share her story about being in a small cult that differed from, like you said, the more sensational media covered cults like NXIVM. And she even says, like, you know, people ask when I say I'm in a cult and they're like, oh, like they're ready to hear about it. And they're like, no, like it was just like this small, like church cult, mm-hmm. and they're like disappointed by it. And she's like, well, I got swindled out $2 million. Like, oh, tell me more. You know what I yeah. mean? But she's also trying to combat that, like, there's so many different stigmas to cult survivors. And just because you're not part of like a big cult doesn't mean that your story is invalid mm-hmm. and that what you went through, you know, sucks.
Yeah. And I loved that whole example where she's talking with that woman and the woman is like, oh, I'm not stupid enough to be mm-hmm. duped by a cult. And while I don't love her comparing it to an abusive relationship, yeah. I think that that's just like not something you should bring into it. I do obviously get what she's saying. Like
mm-hmm.
that is blaming the victim when all of these things are working against them. And it's a scary thing when you're trying to leave. So I like that she was finally standing up for herself and wrote this in that way.
Yeah, I agree. So I was on Reddit today and I saw like this really funny something that readers had caught. And that was that the names of the characters are connections to famous historical vampire characters in vampire stories.
No way!
Yeah, so they say like Harker was from Dracula. Mina was from Dracula. Les is Lestat from Interview with a Vampire. Pam, True Blood. Ed, which was the dad who had like really no real value in this book, mm-hmm. but like Edward Cullen. Kurt from Salem's Lot, which I never read or watched that. So, and then like Abe, they're like, oh, the Abe Lincoln vampire hunter.
Oh,
Martine was like Martine Bancroft. So like they're starting to like wonder if maybe she took these names from actual like vampire connections, which if she did or someone did that for her, that is so fucking creative.
I was just gonna say it sounds a little bit of a stretch, but I love it.
I never would have caught that if that's like a real thing. And so, but I mean, it does kind of like track because
mm-hmm.
if people are just yeah. So I was like, oh.
I didn't really get why she called it Dinner for Vampires.
She says it in like the epilogue, I think it was. She like makes a comment about how like she was dinner for vampires.
Mm-hmm.
Like she was the dinner or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you know, they were just
sucking her dry.
Blood sucking, yeah, sucking her dry. So it is a fun title.
Mm-hmm.
But
and I love that it's in a cult, well, mm-hmm. on a cult TV show while also in an actual cult.
I know, which is so funny. And like, again, like when I like think back, I'm like, when she talks about how she had like no relationship with her coworkers, I'm like, that's just like
mm-hmm.
insane to me because I know her now in like the context of Drama Queens and how close she is with Sophia and Hillary. I know apparently her and Hillary like don't talk anymore.
Mm-hmm.
There was, I don't know the full extent. And Beth, Joy had even like talked about it on something that like she doesn't like know. She might know what went wrong, but like she hopes that they can like reconnect and like mm-hmm. rekindle their relationship. Had something to do, I think, with maybe Joy had said something problematic.
Mm, okay.
I think maybe because of her religion, potentially.
I also want to know more about what she did to alienate herself more so from Sophia Bush than everyone else. Like, she apologizes to Sophia a lot in this book.
Yeah, I don't know. But I know her and Sophia are close now because they still do the podcast together. But there's also, I'd seen on Reddit that like, which I guess because of like the context of the book and how male-centric it is and male-controlling and who like Sophia and Hillary are as women, you know, empowered women who are for women, they didn't really promote this book for her.
Okay.
And I think that they just probably don't agree with a lot that Joy did in her past, because I feel like, again, like if there's like a homosexual thing, like Sophia's now dating a woman,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's so I'm
hottest couple on the planet. Are you fucking kidding me?
I know. So there had to have been some things that have like gone wrong in their group dynamic.
Yeah, because that's a really good point.
Writing this book brought some of that out.
Yeah, but that's a really good point that like. Yes, you can excuse some of your behaviors because you were in a cult, mm-hmm. but you can't excuse some of those other behaviors that were based on your religion and because uh-huh. of your beliefs. That has nothing to do with the cult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's a really good point.
I think that there was like a little, I think if I were to like, if I had time, I would have done like a true like deep dive.
Yeah.
Because like, and I am interested, like, and I want to listen to her. She was on call her daddy last year, end of last year, and I haven't listened to it yet, but I have it on my queue of podcast
mm-hmm.
to listen to. Because I'm interested to hear her interviews about the book.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And see how she kind of promotes it. Because it's just so crazy to me because seeing her in the show and just seeing, obviously she's a great actress, but just the chemistry that she has with her co-stars
mm-hmm.
and then the fact that she didn't feel connected to them at all in real life is so crazy to me. Like she was fighting that chemistry in her
life. She did a lot of like questionable things in her storyline too as Haley that I feel like don't align with her religion. You know, the biggest arc of hers that I related to was when she was like in her deep depression and she was like contemplating, you know, ending her life or whatever it was. Like she was just so heavy and like her emotions. I'm like, that must have been hard for her to get there, mm-hmm. knowing like what I know now, but also her life kind of sucked. So maybe it didn't,
mm-hmm.
you know, she's in an complicated relationship.
And she says, you know, oh, I wanted to do it to show the real grit of like a teenage drama. But mm-hmm. some of the storylines, I'm like, how did you rationalize that one with your faith, you know?
I know. It's crazy. But I am like really enjoy listening to the podcast and then like hearing all their point of views too. Especially as like women who were on this show that was so much masculinity and testosterone.
Mm-hmm. And Hollywood is still a dangerous place for women, but even more so then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah. Anything else you wanted to touch on?
No, I just want to say I was totally getting this visual of when she finally is ready to leave the cult, and I could see her like Googling how to know if you're in a cult, and she's checking off every fucking box. She's like, oh, isolation, stealing money, like just all of it. And she's like, oh crap.
I know.
Everyone has been saying I'm in a cult, and it's true. It's gotta be so, not just sad, but so like, are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. I really was falling for this, and everyone was right the whole time.
I know. All right, well, you want to get to the ratings?
Let's do it.
All right, so our rating system for this episode is out of Blue Eyes.
Blue Eyes. Oh, God, that poor guy. He probably read this book and was like, Jesus Christ.
I know. She's really still harboring a flame for me, clearly.
Seriously.
The one that got away is the vibe I was getting.
I'm kind of torn on this one. I originally rated it 3.5.
Mm-hmm.
I could go 3.5 or 4. I loved the audiobook. Like we already talked about, how she wrote it as, you know, conversational and she every issue that came up, she described it in, okay, here's how they manipulated me. And then also described it in, and here is why I fell for it. And I really mm-hmm. liked that.
I agree.
There was some of it that I just felt like was so unnecessary. Like when she's talking about, like the conversation about speaking French with that girl. And I know that they were doing it to build these like friendships and stuff.
Yeah.
But I wish that some of that was replaced with actual background information, like mm-hmm. about her family or whatever. So I'm going to go 4 because I think it's so impressive and badass of her. Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like the 3.5 was because like, anything with organized religion gives me the heebie-jeebies.
Uh-huh.
And I just can't believe that someone would be a Christian after all this, and she still is. But that's not my business. So I'm going to say 4 because I think it's very brave to say all these things when she's not that far removed from it.
Mm. No.
And, you know, her even, daughter's like, going to read this book.
I know. And, like, someone even on the Reddit thread I was reading said, like, I wonder if this was too soon for her to, like, put this book out because it's so recent. But someone's like, no. Like, this is the best time for her to do it. Like, it just happened. She's trying to save other women and mm-hmm. other people from the same fate that she went in.
Well,
and she has this huge fault. She has a huge cult following. Mm-hmm. So people are going to read this. And then so she might help some, you know, a few people that are in the same scenario and just don't realize it.
That person that she pulled into the cult because she was from a One Tree Hill message board. But anyway, I agree with that because she didn't get to pursue this court case mm-hmm. against them to get all her money back. So here's her little fuck you to say, okay, well then I'm going to expose you. I'm not going to use your real names, but everyone's going to easily find out who you are on Reddit.
Exactly. And now she's going to at least recoup some of her money because you know she's mm-hmm. going to make a bank off this book,
yeah.
you know, and all the promos and stuff. But yeah, I gave it 4.5 out of 5. I really liked it. I definitely am glad I switched to audio because I think that I would have dragged through it. And I also don't think it would have sat with me as well as it did if I didn't do audio. And I definitely think I will only do audios of memoirs from here on out because I think that that's the best way to read them because it's a real story.
Mm-hmm.
I think real stories are better for me to listen to on audio. The reason why I couldn't give it a full 5 is because I agree. There was just too much church and religion for me. I am not a religious person whatsoever. Like, at least, you know, you went to Christian school?
Mm-hmm.
Catholic? Eric was Catholic. You were Christian,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I was Christian school.
So, but I don't know. I know jack shit mm-hmm. about religion.
Oh,
they're throwing words I'm Seventh Day Adventist. Don't know what the fuck that is. Like,
we had a lot of those.
I just don't know any of this because I'm so far removed from religion I just don't even. So sometimes when I'm like that person that, and I've talked about this, when certain things or topics are talked about a lot that I have no interest in or really care to learn about, it just really pulls me out of the scenario. But I will say the way that she talked about stuff was engaging.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that she did the audiobook was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And she had this witty humor to this dark fucking time of her life.
She did.
And I really appreciate that. And I love that she's on my screen at Christmas time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that because I was kind of at a war with like, oh God, this is so familiar to me, like this whole purity culture and like waiting till marriage to have sex and blah, blah, blah. And like being so anti all of that. Whereas for you, it's like, what the fuck are these people talking about?
I know. I'm like, I don't know. And I'm just like, I don't, the Bible groups and just like this feeling. It's like, I feel like I'm Sarah from Love is Blind when she goes like fucking Ben's church. I'm like, this is terrible. Mm-hmm. Get me the fuck out of here. Like, this is just not. This is not it for me.
But you can totally see how all of this under the guise of a family and support, like I totally get why people fall for this. I totally, totally get it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the money thing is where it gets absolutely crazy to me. But also one other thing I wanted to say is that with these cults, a lot of times actors are easy targets because they have a lot of money and more often than not, they have strained relationships with their families or they've moved far away from their families. They have distance. So it's like, we do see that so often.
100%. 100%.
Wow. This is why I never became an actor, Heather.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh God. Anyways,
let's end that.
We have for you today. If you like what you heard and you think that Kelsey should go back into her acting career, please make sure to follow, subscribe, and rate and review the podcast on whatever platform you listen to us on. If you have any book recommendations or questions for us, you can email us at fullybookedcafpod@gmail.com. Also, be sure to follow us on TikTok and Instagram at fullybookedcafpod to see our upcoming reads. Thanks for checking us out. And remember,
if you need us, we'll be running lines for my acting audition.
Bye.
Bye.
Running lines.